Declassified CIA files reveal that U.S. intelligence officials went to great lengths to protect a Ukrainian fascist leader and suspected Nazi collaborator from prosecution after World War II, and they set him up in New York to wage covert war against the Soviet Union. This according to a new report to Congress. What are some of the stakes that they will take? What will they do to try to control, to manipulate? Up next, Jim Marrs joins us as we talk about the elite's conspiracy on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast. I'm looking forward to this program with Jim Marrs. He's an award-winning journalist, and he has 30-plus years' experience with several major newspapers. Back in 1999, he began teaching a course on UFOs that was probably the first university-level UFO course in the nation. He has investigated the Kennedy assassination, the trillion-dollar conspiracy, the rise of the Fourth Reich. Here he is, Jim Marrs, back on Coast to Coast, a Coast favorite. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, George, it's always a pleasure to be with you. I notice you started right off mentioning a few minutes ago about how that now there's more data coming out showing that, gee, we brought Nazis over here after World War II. I believe you and I talked pretty extensively about that when my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, came out, and that's been, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah. You know what? We're beginning to know more and more about things that you've reported on years ago. It's just beginning to back up the things that you've reported on, Jim. And I'm sure there's more there.
You know, the problem, though, George, is that I'm always on the edge. So,
yes.
You know, years ago in the 60s when I was trying to tell people there was a conspiracy to kill Kennedy, I was just the conspiracy theorist. Now everybody's caught up. Then I try to tell them there's really something going on with UFOs. And, well, no, now I'm really the conspiracy theorist, but now everybody's kind of catching up. And then I told them, hey, Nazis came over here and are trying to set up a Fourth Reich in this country. And, you know, once again, now it's all coming true.
Well, you know, this report, it's very explicit. It talks about how we protected ex-Nazis more so than previously known.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of these people infiltrated government. Science. Now, yeah, you know, we've heard the stories of Wernher von Braun and how he was responsible for really our rocket program and how he did so well with it. And, you know, I don't know where we'd be had he not been here. But, you know, bottom line is a lot of these people got involved in high levels of government and industry in this country after World War II, didn't they?
That's true. But it really shouldn't come as any surprise because in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and in fact, in others, Ruled by Secrecy, and to some extent in the new book, The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy, I'll try to point out that many of the American business and political leadership, such as John J. McCoy, Alan Dulles, Prescott Bush, Henry Ford, these people all supported Hitler and helped create Hitler and the Third Reich. So why is it so surprising that they would, after the war, just kind of continue on with their proclivities?
Because during the World War II, prior to us getting involved to help Britain and the Japanese pulling us into the war, Hitler wasn't coming after us, was he?
No. In fact, right up until Pearl Harbor, the vast amount of Americans that the polls showed did not want to go to war. They considered what was happening in Europe a European problem, and they didn't want to go to war, you know?
You know, what's amazing to me now, Jim, is with the technology we have today, with Twitter, Facebook, the Internet, and everything else, there is no way a Holocaust could occur without us knowing about it almost instantly. Yet this thing was kept so quiet for so many years.
Right.
I mean, how was that allowed to happen?
Well, I'm not even so sure about today. If they ran through this Cybersecurity Act of 2010, you know, that was introduced by Jay Rockefeller, it provides for a kill switch in the office of the president so he can flip a switch and, oops, no more Internet. So I think we have to be concerned about that at some point.
Good point. We're going to talk about that as well. Tell me about your latest work here and how you begin again to look at government conspiracies, the elite, and how much control and manipulation they want over
us. Going back to, I think, probably just the end of August, first September, I began to try to work on an updated introduction for the $1 trillion conspiracy, which will be coming out next year, probably about June. We'll probably have another talk about then. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put in a whole new, 20 pages or more of updated material, okay? So I thought, well, I'll just start keeping up with what's going on, kind of synthesize it, and we'll make like a new introduction for the softcover edition of the $1 trillion conspiracy. George, I'm up to 374 pages. it's happening so fast.
It's not an update. It's another book.
It's another book. It's coming in so fast, so hard. Things are happening so quickly now. And from all sides that I have no idea I'm going to be able to boil all this down into just 20 pages, but it's truly amazing. I think two of the things that have cropped up on my radar is the public outcry over the over this new TSA
scanner.
The naked body scanner. And, of course, in my book, The $1 trillion Conspiracy, which came out earlier this year, and I'm all of a sudden here a few months ago, I was getting deluged with internet mail pointing out that, hey, did you know that the former head of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, who was leading the charge on television and radio saying how we've got to have these full body scanners in the airport. Did you know that his marketing firm actually represents Rapid Scan, the manufacturer of these, you know,
and I'm going,
wait a minute. Obviously you didn't read my book. And that was all in there way back at the first of the year. But here's what's happened now, George. I don't know if you've already talked about this, but I've just got to point this out because it shows the absolute transparency of the argument about why we need these full body scanners, which, by the way, according to a letter that I have in my files signed by several reputable scientists, including the head of the University of I can't read it here this minute.
That's all right.
It's the Professor Emeritus John Sadai, Department of Biochemistry and Biophysics for the University of California. He and several other scientists sent a letter to Dr. John Holden, the President's Science Advisor, pointing out that nobody's tested these things. We don't know what this is going to be doing, and yet I've seen the scientific papers that the terahertz radiation given off by these full body scanners actually has been shown to uncouple your DNA. Let's don't start figuring out what that can do to you, but it can't be good.
No, you know, I travel a lot, Jim, and I've been fortunate to have a lot of TSA workers there that, you know, they're nice people. I mean, they try to get
They're good folks. You know, they're just trying to make a living. But they're not the problem. It's the people who put them there and it's the people who are keeping them there. And here's the fraud, George. Here's the fraud. The day before Thanksgiving, the most heavily traveled air traffic day of the year, there was an internet buzz going on. They were going to calling for an opt-out day, okay? They want everybody to opt out and not go through the full body scanners. All right, well, the TSA leadership is bound to have been aware of that. It's all over the internet. So, and yet this is the very leadership that's been telling us the full body scanners are absolutely essential to air safety. We're not going to be safe if we don't use these things, you know? And on the busiest air traffic day of the year, when they were so afraid that the TV cameras might come out and it might show that people were objecting to it and it might lead to more people objecting to it, what did they do, George? They turned them off and they waved people around them. Go on, folks. Just go on.
Now, and you know what? We traveled pretty safely that time, didn't we?
Hey, nobody got anybody, did they?
Nope.
It's, God.
I'm concerned. Not just the radiation that you or I would get as we whisk through that, but the guy who's standing there, the woman who's standing there for the TSA every day, 8 hours a day.
They've got a problem. In fact, the leader of the union represents TSA workers. They're now finally taking a stand and saying, wait a minute, we need to know more about this. You know, this is the whole thing. These type of things do not get reported in the corporate control mainstream media. But I can remember a few years ago, one of the big problems with law enforcement officers, policemen, where there was a unnatural rise in cancer rates. Okay, and then they finally figured out that that early on they were putting these radar units on the back window and aimed forward, so they got their head, and these guys were coming down with brain tumors. And then the one that's almost funny, if it wasn't so tragic, is that they had the handheld radar guns, and so when nobody's coming along, they'd lay them in their lap, still on, and they were getting testicular cancer. Holy cow, you know. So, I mean, the people who are administering these so-called security measures had better take a long, hard look at what they're participating in, because they're liable to be the first victims.
Well, you know, we look at things like the Gulf War syndrome, where they go into denial, Agent Orange during Vietnam, where they went into denial. And, you know, and this is just another one of those cases, Jim, where they have no idea what they're doing, or maybe they do. Maybe they know that these things are potentially dangerous, and they just don't care. What do you think?
Well, and now you're getting into my bailiwick. When I write the books like Rule by Secrecy, Rise of the Fourth Reich, The $1 Trillion Conspiracy, most people cannot, do not argue with me over the facts and the information and the conspiracies that I'm writing about. The only place where a lot of people kind of go, I don't know, is because I'm trying to tell you it's part of a plan. It's supposed to be that way. For example, it's not that they're just greed-ridden. If you'll go and look at the real top dogs, the real upper crust, you're going to find that they just flat come right out and tell you, you know, what their thinking is. For example, Prince Philip, one of the British royals, okay, he pretty well sums up the attitude of this ruling elite when he says, quote, human population growth is probably the single most serious long-term threat to survival. If it isn't controlled voluntarily, it will be controlled involuntarily by an increase in disease, starvation, and war. Well, just to make sure that he's not just speculating, he's not just saying, well, this could happen if people don't change their ways. At another point, he was quoted as saying, in the event that I am reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation. George, it's worse than these people don't care. They want us dead. There's been the Club of Rome report. You go all the way back. You study their papers, their documents, and you find out that they truly believe that there is a overpopulation problem. And in their own methodical, pragmatic way, they see the only solution is to just reduce the human population. And yet, let me point out something, George. I don't know. I'm sure you had lots of people on your show who talk about overpopulation. Yeah, that's a big concern. But let me point out a fact here. The average living space today in Hong Kong is 1,700 square feet. Okay? Yeah, that's not a bad size apartment, is it?
No.
All right. So assuming that everybody on the planet, all 6.5 billion of us, was given 1,700 square feet of living space, the entire human population of the earth could live quite comfortably in the state of Texas. Not just that I want them coming here. Wait a minute.
You don't want 6.8 billion people in Texas.
No. I'm just making a point here. Don't start moving to Texas. but the point is, we really don't have an overpopulation problem. We just have a population concentration problem. Everybody's jammed into these huge cities, you know.
Well, somebody was telling me they had just come back from Cairo, and he said people are elbow to elbow. elbow to elbow everywhere, wherever you go. I mean, and that, you know, these cities are so congested. But, you know, when I travel from St. Louis, let's say, to Los Angeles, and you go over miles and miles of desert down there. You know, if I were a space creature, an E.T., Jim, and I landed out there in the desert, you'd say this planet was uninhabitable.
That's right. That's right. I tell you what, just try driving from Dallas to El Paso. you can, in fact, depending on which direction you take, you can drive all day long and never get out of the state of Texas. I mean, there is so much. That's what I'm saying. It's just population concentration. We're all jammed in these big cities. And, you know, why is that?
This Kennedy assassination of 1963, was that the beginning of all of this, or did that just happen for its own reasons?
That's a good question. And no, it didn't just happen for its own reasons. That was definitely part of this. But I would hesitate to say that it was the start of it. It was the more public start of the decline of the American Republic. Okay, but actually the roots go back probably to at least World War One specifically. Actually, you know, if you've read my book, Robot Secrecy, actually you can track back plans to take over the world throughout history. But starting at the end of World War II, I'm talking about the international financial elite, the people who actually own everything, when they decided that they were going to try to create a world government, then it was called the League of Nations, and they tried to put that together, and it only failed because the United States Senate said, no, we're not ready to give up our national sovereignty. So they refused to go along with that scheme. So the perpetrators created the secret societies of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, a sister organization for the United Kingdom. And the avowed purpose of these two societies was to condition the population to the desirability of a United Nations. Okay, a one world government. But, and that's, they've been pursuing that ever since with varying degrees of success, mostly not much. But then again, they don't truly want one world government. If you want to know what the game plan is, just go back and read a book that's written by a British Fabian socialist named Eric Arthur Blair. And he wrote a book in 1948, and he was well-connected to the royals and to the British aristocracy, and I think he really did have a pretty good handle on what the game plan was for these folks. And, of course, he...
As far back as then, huh?
As far back as then. In fact, about that same time was when another socialist in Britain, Harold, the future prime minister... He said, I'm going to be prime minister, and he was. So they have long-reaching plans, and the plan, though, as put in this fellow's book, which he transposed the numbers of the year, instead of 1948, it became 1984. And, of course, he used the pen name George Orwell.
Wow. That was Harold Wilson, I think.
You were Harold Wilson, yes.
Yeah. We'll be back in a moment with you, Jim, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jim Mars, what do the elitists really want with us in this control? You know, one, they have more money than they need. They have the power that they want. They have the best doctors, the best everything. What do they want with us?
Well, number one, they want less of us. And they make that very clear, actually. If you just read their own material and study their plans, you find that basically they are all on board with eugenics, which is population control. Again, going from their assumption that there's just too many people. And they're coming at us from all different directions. Genetically modified food, vaccines, chemtrails, fluoridation of the water. The argument, the controversy over fluoride was raging when I was a young guy back in the 50s, and it's still going on. And what I'm reminded of is the fact that the medical establishment up until the late 70s was trying to tell us that that small doses of lead were not that bad. You know, it's okay. And finally, common sense won out, and now they pass laws against lead and a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Of course, lead causes all kinds of problems. But as to what they really want to do, again, I would refer you to George Orwell's 1984. In that book, they have divided the world into three giant economic blocks. In the book, it's Oceania, Asiana, East Asiana. In today's real world, it's the European Union, which is already in existence, South American Union, which is already in existence, African Union, which is already in existence. They'll be merged together. And then the soon-to-be North American Union.
Nope, that's the last one, isn't it?
Now, the last one would be the Asian Union.
Asian one.
But that's going to be the easiest one, because if you'll think about it, most of the Asians are already pyramids of power. You know, they're run by a small group or somebody. And so you just bring them on the board of directors or buy them out, and then you've got control. And then you play off these blocks continually against one another in conflict and even limited warfare for maximum control. That's what they want. In fact, if you back off, look at the broad picture, George, you'll find that through most of human history, the method of control was religion.
Right.
God told me, you know, that I should rule over you. Oh, okay. And that was it. But with the Age of Enlightenment, people began to wise up. And today, religion is losing a lot of its hold, although spirituality is on the increase. More and more people are holding close spirituality, but they're turning their back on established religions. And that's, it's all about controlling the population. And where did it all start? It all started, of course, in the Garden of Eden, I guess, which is generally recognized to have been between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, and oops, that's Iraq. The one place today, you and I and most people listening, you can't just pack up and go over there, you know. Right. Of course, I guess you can join the army and go over there. But
you're almost guaranteed to go over there.
Yeah, they give you a trip over there real quick. And but then all throughout human history, at least in the Western world, Western civilization started in Mesopotamia, what is now Iraq, spread into the Caucasus Mountain regions, in through what is now Russia, and on into Eastern Europe and Western Europe, and then southward to Palestine, Egypt, Rome, Greece, and then into Western Europe, and then into the British Isles. And then, of course, by the 1700s, there were colonies on the west coast of the east coast of the United States. And then during the 1800s, it was one big movement to fill up North America, moving from the east to the west. Now, why were these people, why did they keep moving? You know, gee, if you have a nice place to live and, you know, have a nice town or community, why do you want to pack up and move? Well, historians make no secret about that. Everybody has continued to move westward, trying to escape religious and political tyranny. But, of course, the problem is today is that we've filled up the North American continent, and there's really no place to go.
There's no
now.
Place to go. You can't go anywhere.
And these would-be world rulers now have access to technology that is just absolutely incredible. And they are using it to great effect, not only to try to curb the human population. You know, it's a fact that the male sperm count in the Western nations has been decreasing dramatically over the past 30, 40 years. And now they're helping it along with debilitating food and water, fluoridation, chemtrails, you know, everything, genetically modified foods, not to mention just bad, fatty foods that do not do you any good. Anything they can do to break down our immunization systems so that they can achieve their population reduction. And it's time that we start really addressing these items instead of being mesmerized by the television.
A few years ago, Jim, I think if we were talking about this, people would think these folks are nuts.
Oh, they've said I was a nut since the 50s, I guess. But hey, it's all coming true now.
In little pieces, exactly.
Yeah, in my new book, The $1 trillion Conspiracy, about how zombie banks are destroying America. You know, even at this late date, a lot of people are going, oh, well, you know, that can't be right. And yet, just on December the 11th, the New York Times, not exactly your radical rag, published a long, lengthy article entitled "A Secretive Banking Elite Rules Trading in Derivatives." Okay? So even the New York Times, the state as they are, is catching on. There's a handful of people, they want to control us. And it's absolutely anathema to the idea of individual liberty and freedom.
What are the various mechanisms out there for this control? What do you see them able to accomplish?
Well, for one thing, there was another story that appeared in the Wall Street Journal here recently called "New Ways Bankers Are Spying on You," which is pretty wild. And yet, you know what? Even that was not really a new idea. During the Clinton administration, there was a brief furor over proposed new federal banking regulations that would require all banks to report to the government any large deposits, withdrawals, unusual activity, you know, in your banking account. And euphemistically, this was called the Know Your Customer program.
Mm-hmm.
And under this program, the banks would have been required to create a profile of each customer and report any deviation from that profile to the federal government. And
if you put money in your account, cash in your account, take it out, and it's too high, they report you. And it's your own money.
If it's flagged, they report you. For example, say George, say you've got a car, you know, maybe your mother-in-law passes away or something, and you got a car there, so you sell the car. So you've got, you know, maybe $10,000-$15,000 in cash, and you go deposit that in your bank account. The banks would be required to report it to the government, and they would flag the transaction before anything happened. In fact, in my book, The $1 trillion Conspiracy, I tell a similar story that happened to a couple in the Midwest. They had some extra money. They wanted to pay down their credit cards. So they sent an unusual amount of money to pay off their credit card. And after a month or so went by, and they noticed that it had not been recorded, they contacted the bank, and the bank told them that under new Homeland Security that they had flagged this and that they were going to have to take a double look before they could do anything with that money. So, in other words, you didn't even have control over your own money. In 1998, Representative Ralph Paul was about to introduce legislation trying to stop this Know Your Customer program, but an irate public saved him the trouble. Everybody told their banker, you know, I don't want everybody to know what I do with my money. That's my money, and it's very private. And so the bankers kind of backed off and said, no, okay, we're not going to do this. But Representative Paul said, somehow, though, I imagine such action will not stop them, only slow them down. And George, he was absolutely right, because just about all the provisions of Know Your Customer can now be found in the Patriot Act.
Jeez. And, you know, in your neck of the woods near Houston, they're putting in more and more cameras, but they're doing this all over the country now, you know, spying on people everywhere. I mean, is all this necessary, Jim?
No, of course not. Of course not. You know, but it's not necessary to protect us. I live in a rural county, basically, and yet they're putting cameras up at major intersections. And it's really a hoot. One of my joys in life is reading the crime report from here in the little county where I live. And we have such terrible crimes as a man was had a problem, was cited because his dog, a Yorkie, peed in the park. Another woman, a man got drunk and was arguing with his trash can. This is on the police report, the official police report, things like that. You know, a family dispute, neighbor says his dog got a neighbor dog got in his yard and tore up his petunias. This is the type of thing we're having to face in the rural county, and yet they're putting cameras up for our security. Let me just put it this way.
And we got by fine without them.
Without
10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Sure. How did we ever survive? And let me just say this. Are there terrorists in the world? Sure. Do they want to try to destroy our freedom and liberty? Well, if that's their goal, they've won.
Yeah.
They've won.
It's like the Truman Show. Remember that movie?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Everything we do now is on camera and things like that. You know, I was thinking back again at the Kennedy assassination. You've done some work in there, and, you know, we just had the anniversary day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, you know, how the Zapruder film was the film, whether it's been altered, edited, who knows. But the bottom line is, today, there'd be a million pieces of video all over the place. But in those days, you know, just to have this one piece of film, this historical record,
right,
was miraculous.
Although, keep in mind, George, nobody got to see that for 15 years. 15 years after the Kennedy assassination before you got to see it.
Did we even know it existed until then?
Oh, of course, because I can remember watching Abraham Zapruder on the Dallas TV stations within an hour or two after the assassination. He was talking about how he had this film and he was going to turn it over to FBI, yada, yada, yada. But nobody ever got to see it. Before we go any further, can I talk about two things that I've got coming up before we lose the early audience?
Yep, go ahead.
One, I think you're already aware of, because I think you've had some of the people involved in this on your show, and that is an ocean cruise, the Cruise into 2012 Seminar at Sea. It's coming up March the 5th to the 12th in 2011. It's going to leave from L.A., go down the Mexican Riviera. It's got some great people lined up, like Barbara Lamb, Daniel Brinkley, Richard Hoagland. I know he's a good.
You there? We lost Jim. So we'll get Tom in there to make the call, and we'll get him right back on and pop him in again. It happens every once in a while. I was hearing his phone starting to go a little bit, and then boom, he went at the last minute. Well, we got a couple minutes before we get to the top of the hour, so we will get Jim back on. I mean, it didn't sound like his line was that bad, but what we're talking about with Jim Mars, of course, whose website is jimmars.com, jimmars.com. We are talking about his work with the elitists who are attempting to control everything we do. And you know what? And I see that in all walks of life as well. I mean, would you, for example, if you were stopped at a red light at 4 o'clock in the morning, and the light was like 4 minutes long, and there was nobody there, and no cameras, would you go through that light? And I bet most of the people would just sit there and wait and wait and wait. And, you know, to me, that's just, it's crazy. If there's nobody there, why isn't the light just flashing? But these cameras are going to catch you, and you know, if you even just go through by a nanosecond, it's going to click your license plate and it's going to take you. Now, one of the problems has been at court, as Dr. Ken Warren from St. Louis University has testified and said, is that it's no guarantee that you were the driver. And it's very difficult. See, at least if a police officer stops you today, he sees you. He gets your license. He knows it was you in that car. You really can't tell On the back of some of these tickets, they ask you, if you're not the driver, who was, and what was their driver's license? And so that's what they're trying to do that way. But in court, not a lot of these tickets hold up if you elect to fight it. The problem is, not a lot of people want to fight it. And, you know, that could be also a dangerous situation as well. So I think we got Jim Mars back, and let's go back to him. There you go, Jimmy. You still with us?
I'm still here. I don't know. Maybe somebody hit that internet kill switch and it shifted to radio or something.
You never know. You never know at all.
Are you still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. I was just talking about this cruise into 2012 seminar at sea. If you're interested and want to find out, this is going to be not only a great chance to kind of get away, but to actually to hear some enlightening material having to do with 2012 and the last wave before the huge shift in consciousness. And you can find out all about that at www.cruiseinto2012.com. And of course, another thing that I'll be at coming in the new year is, and I don't know, you may be there too, George, is the International UFO Congress.
I might be at there. I know I'm going to be at Conscious Life in February in L.A. for sure.
Right.
I'll be at that event. In,
I hope to see it.
Travel schedule now.
Hope to see at the International UFO Congress. That's February 23rd to the 27th at the Fort McDowell Resort in Fountain Hill, Arizona, right there by Phoenix. And, of course, you can find out all about that by just Googling UFO Congress or go to UFOCongress.com, surprisingly enough.
Well, I tell you what, it's 9 degrees in St. Louis right now, and that sounds kind of nice.
It sounds like the place to be, doesn't it? Man. It really
does. They talk about climate change and warming. You know, there's no doubt that we go through cycles and we get warming cycles and stuff. But I got to tell you, this is one of the coldest early winters I've ever experienced in the Midwest in years.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense, Jim.
It certainly doesn't, especially like last year in March. This year, March the 9th, we should have been going into spring here in Texas. We had a foot of snow, 12 inches of snow here at my little ranchito. And I've lived in Texas my entire life, and I've never seen that much snow. Sometimes we'll get 2-3 inches and we think, we got some snow. But 12 inches, that was really incredible. And that happened this year.
Let's talk more about all of this, Jim, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.